I will now call the next case for oral argument. The next case is number A22-0949, In Re the Welfare of the Children of TJCB. We are appearing today on a video format using the Zoom format, but our procedures are essentially the same. Each party will have 15 minutes for its initial argument, and then appellant will have 5 additional minutes for rebuttal argument. You should be able to see the time clock on your screen if you're using the gallery view or some other view like that, and so the time clock will count backward. Counsel for appellant, you may introduce yourself and your client, and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Kimberly Wimmer, and I'm here representing the appellant mother. Initials in the brief and this case are TJCB. And I'm here today asking on behalf of the mother that you reverse the decision of the Couchiching County District Court dated June 17th, 2022, that terminate her parental rights. In preparing for today's argument, in reviewing the brief that I submitted to the court, I feel that best outlines the facts and the applicable statutes that are before you here in this matter. But with that being said, with my time that I have before you today, I would like to first start by focusing on some of the facts and the timing in this case, and then shifting to the statutes that apply and specific portions of Judge Tremone's order that I feel are in error and would be appropriate to reverse his decision.
Ms. Wimmer, let me suggest that you skip the facts for now and go directly to your legal arguments. We are always well prepared and well briefed on the facts, and so I think you can assume that we understand, at least in a general way, those factual issues. Feel free, of course, to weave them into your argument, but perhaps you could do this. Go straight to the second thing you mentioned and talk about the legal issues.
Thank you. Your Honor, two statutes that are most important for the court here today: Minnesota Statute Section 260.301, Subdivision 1B4. That is the child protection statute that involves palpable unfitness. And then also Minnesota Statute Section 260.301, Subdivision 1B7, and that is the best interest determination. And I feel that I understand that you're well aware of the facts. But I feel that the facts in this case support a different decision than was reached by Judge Tremone. My client in this case, one of the things issued in judge, or that was stated in Judge Tremone's order, is that with respect to the palpable unfitness statute, that nothing has changed since there was a prior involuntary termination of parental rights. And I would argue with that fact, specifically that order from Colorado. And again, I'm assuming that the court knows what I'm talking about when I say that, given Judge Johnson's explanation, but indicated that at that time, my client failed to comply with treatment plans, failed to comply with mental health and substance abuse concerns, failed to provide evidence of continued sobriety, didn't have visitation with the children and had inconsistent communication with professionals. And that just wasn't the case in this matter for the first month before we got to the permanency petition being filed. In this matter, there was a dramatically different situation going on where evidence was presented uncontradicted at trial that my client did do what we would hope she would do in this situation when her children were born. She, starting with their birth itself, informed medical professionals that they may test positive for chemicals so that they could get the best possible care. She then stayed at the hospital, cared for them, loved for them, bonded with them, took care of them. Those facts are not contested. And she did all those things. And in addition to that, sought out services, mental health services, chemical dependency services after she was discharged from the hospital. So she got employment.
I can just be a little more, ask you to be a little more specific here. So when you're looking at, I think it's a conclusion of law number 10, mother has failed to rebut the presumption that she is probably unfit. Aren't you primarily relying upon, I think it is those first 2 weeks of the children's lives when they were in the hospital, when she was boarding in the hospital, and she was, it appears like by most accounts, doing what she should be doing during those 2 weeks. Is that 2 week period most of what you're saying? Yes, that's what, how she rebutted the presumption.
I would say that. And then in addition, Your Honor, I mean, that was very important, but then also in addition, there was a period of time after that when she was back in the community, the children were in a foster home, and she also continued to seek services in the local community, that being chemical dependency services, mental health services. She was very appropriate and displayed every characteristic we would want her to display as a parent and supervised visits in the community. She obtained employment in the community. So not only was there that period of 2 weeks when she was in the hospital with the children, but there was also a period after where she was doing well as well.
How long was that period? I just want to have a sense.
Sure, certainly, Your Honor. I believe the time period was 35 days after the children were born. At that point, the county sought to file the permanency petition. So leading up to that point, things were going very well. That's our position, is things were going well, yet nonetheless, the county changed its mind and chose to file the permanency petition. At that point, things moved very, very fast. The county asked to no longer be able to provide reasonable efforts. Visitation ceased, essentially, everything that had been put in motion in a positive sense came to a halt. So, there was a period shortly before the trial was scheduled.
And Ms. Wimmer, so why was that? And I understand that she was in an inpatient treatment program, I think, but then she voluntarily left the program. And I think her explanation in her testimony is that she did so because her visitation was cut off, but I'm just trying to get the sequence and understand the causal connection between these things. So why was her visitation terminated? Well, first of all, am I correct in what I said? And if so, why was her visitation terminated?
That is a good question, Your Honor. We questioned that as well at the time, because we felt it should not have been terminated. We could not point to an event that all of a sudden things started going poorly or some major event that would cause a visitation to cease. The Judge Shermone had asked that the parties articulate why there were compelling reasons not to file the permanency petition. And when it came time to argue that or present that to the court, the county's position changed and changed drastically. All of a sudden, they took the position that there was not compelling reasons, that reasonable efforts should not continue. That's our argument, is that there wasn't an event that meant visitation should cease. I believe, Ms. French will be able to argue more, I'm sure, but I believe the county's position is that my client was using the children to accept services or participate in services and other using the children. And that's why she went to treatment. But my position would be that makes sense to me. She wanted to have a mother, mother child relationship with her children. That's what the county was asking her to do, was to participate in this treatment and these services so that she could be a mother to her children. And she was doing it. The court is
my understanding. I'm sorry if I, just because time is short, my understanding is that she relapsed at some point. Was that before or after her supervised visits were terminated?
There was a relapse prior to the supervised visits terminating. It was approximately the same time that the permanency petition was filed. And then there was also relapse before the trial was scheduled for a day, and I think the court outlines that she had relapsed prior to that trial starting, and the trial had to be postponed for a short period of time at that time as well. There was in between the time of visits stopping and reasonable efforts stopping, and in that there was a short period of time where the county didn't have contact with my client or wasn't working with my client. And so I think the facts that are before the court is what happened in that short period of time.
And am I correct that the district court made an express determination that there was no need for reasonable efforts?
They did, yes. We argued that that should not be the case, and the court ruled with the county and ordered that reasonable efforts did not need to continue.
And it seems to me you're not challenging that on appeal. I mean, I think that's a ruling that perhaps could be independently challenged, but if that's not challenged on appeal, we take that as a given, right? There's no, we can't reason there that the county failed to provide reasonable efforts in light of that ruling by the court, correct?
Correct. I'm not, the court was clear in its ruling that reasonable efforts did not need to continue. I'm not challenging that at this point, Your Honors.
I have questions now. I'm contrary to what I said earlier. I do have questions about the facts, but as they relate to the legal issues. At some point, she was charged with some crimes which were pending at the time of trial. I'm unclear if that was as a result of a single incident or multiple incidents, and when did that incident or incidents occur?
I would classify it as a single incident, and you know, over a short, you know, several hour period of time, and it occurred very shortly before the first trial was about to start. So maybe a day or two, or Ms. French will probably have the days better than I do, but it was just, you know, within a couple of days before that first trial was supposed to start.
You would agree that evidence does not help her, correct? That is, I mean, the fact that in addition to the other issues concerning substance abuse and mental health, that the violence illustrated in the criminal charges is something that the district court must consider?
I would agree that those are not helpful facts to my client. With that said, I would also argue that there's no evidence that that particular conduct adversely impacted the children. And, you know, taking the negative facts, that would be my overall argument with respect to that. When my client had contact and was around her children, she was a good, loving, caring, capable mother. When that got ripped out from underneath her, you know, things maybe took a turn that we wish they wouldn't have taken, but she was always appropriate in the evidence that is before you when she was with her children.
Ms. Wimmer, does the record indicate that one way or the other as to when your client was charged with those crimes right before trial, does the record indicate whether she was under the influence of chemicals at that time?
I do not believe that is in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just have a brief amount of time left. In closing, I would just argue the best interests statute that, you know, this is a case where we have a mother who loves her children, developed a bond with them. She has the ability to care for them, and she showed that. She was abruptly cut out of their lives with no information about them, no contact with them, and faced with the possibility of no future contact with them. It is not in the children's best interest to have this loving, caring parent cut out of their lives. She'll always be their mother, and those boys deserve to know how much that they are loved by their mother. The district court's order makes there's one portion of that where it talks about it might be this is in the mother's best interest, but we're talking about the children's best interest. And I would just argue that those two things aren't mutually exclusive. It can both be in the mother's best interest and in the children's best interest for them to have a relationship with that parent. And you know, I don't have anything additional to argue before you today unless you have additional questions for me.
It appears that there are no further questions at this time, perhaps later, and you will have an opportunity for rebuttal argument for 5 minutes after respondent's argument.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you may introduce yourself and your client and begin your argument.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Molly French. I am the assistant Coochaching County attorney, and I'm here on behalf of respondent, which is the agency, Coochaching County Public Health and Human Services. And I don't want to rehash the arguments that are very well laid out in the trial court's order terminating the mother's parental rights, and I don't want to go over everything in my brief again, but I would like to touch upon some of the court's questions, specifically what happened at the beginning of this case and how things changed. There was a short period of time following the children's birth that mother did well in the hospital with the children for a few weeks. She, you know, also started off her time in the community well after she left the hospital. But that stopped when mother began working with the agency or attempting to work with the agency. And we learned that the way things were going with mother essentially matched the way things were going in Colorado when we got those records. So when we initially filed our CHIPS petition, and I'm sure you can see in the petition, we had not yet confirmed that mother's parental rights in Colorado for the second child were involuntarily terminated. We got those records after we filed our CHIPS petition, and that had to be done quickly because the children were born early February. Mother tested positive for methamphetamines upon their birth. We had to file a CHIPS petition because they were on a hold. So we had to do that without the Colorado confirmation. And throughout the process early on, we got those records. We confirmed that there was an involuntary termination, and we discovered what had happened in Colorado. We hadn't worked with her during those times. Although we knew of mother, she grew up in International Falls. We knew her family. So we learned as the case continued that just like in Colorado, we had a very difficult time attempting to work with mother. Her mental health clearly was a major issue that resulted in a complete lack of insight into her chemical dependency, her mental health, basically everything in her life. And then on March 4th, I believe that's the correct date, mother relapsed on methamphetamine. So within less than a month after the children were born, and she didn't see that as a problem. So as I outlined in my letter to the court, basically saying we no longer have compelling reasons to work with mother, and we asked to move forward with a termination petition. That's a March 7th letter. I explained what had changed.
And just to be clear, Ms. French, was that at the county's initiative or at the district court's initiative? I thought I saw a hint that the court had inquired.
The court had inquired. I think even at the first hearing, the EPC hearing, the court questioned the agency on that. And, admittedly, we didn't have a lot of good information at the time, and we wanted to give mother a chance. We saw how well she was doing at the hospital, caring for the children and working with the nurses. So those were our compelling reasons at the time, but the court was right to challenge that. And as I outlined in my letter, the agency's position did change. So it did start with the court challenging us, but at the same time, the agency was finding out on our own how mother would continue to do in this case. And as we saw, she just continued to relapse and ended up in jail. I think the court asked about the criminal charges. They did happen shortly before trial, and I believe it was originally scheduled at the end of May. She was incarcerated and arrested as a result of those criminal charges, and then tested positive for methamphetamine on the day that trial was to begin. So that's why it was continued. And then the court asked about visits being stopped, and they were ceased by order of the district court dated March 29th. And I believe that was because Ms. Wimmer, on behalf of her client, had filed a motion to ask that the agency continue with reasonable efforts and visits. We argued that, and the district court denied that. And of course, you know, by statute, the agency was not required to continue with reasonable efforts when we have a prior involuntary termination. So mother didn't have visits after the initial period. But the agency is simply asking the court to affirm the trial court's termination of mother's parental rights. Ample arguments in the court's order establishing why mother did not rebut her presumption of palpable unfitness. And I would even go so far as to argue that even without that presumption, agency established by clear and convincing evidence that mother was palpably unfit to care for the children for the foreseeable future. We ask the court to affirm. Thank you.
I have a question about the presumption and the rebuttal of the presumption. So do we look at, can you just to help me understand how we analyze that issue? Am I correct in believing that we should look at the direct exam of that Ms. Wimmer conducted of the three witnesses whom she called at the outset of the hearing, but not review your cross-examination of those three witnesses? Would you agree with that?
Your Honor, I would agree that Ms. Wimmer had the burden of production in that regard to overcome the presumption. But I think the court needs to look at the entire record in determining whether or not she met that burden.
I think the case law says that that we look at the parents' evidence, perhaps in the light most favorable, and ask the question whether the parents' rebuttal evidence is capable of supporting a finding in favor of the parent. So it seems to me that we first consider the parents' evidence, but I guess that's the basis of my question, asking whether we consider the entirety of the testimony of those three witnesses or only the direct exam. I'm not sure if you have any additional thoughts, but.
Yeah, I understand what you're asking now. I do agree with you that that's what the case law says, but practically I'm not sure how the trial court could have satisfactorily done that without considering all of the evidence at trial. But I think when you look at only the three witnesses that were put forth by Ms. Wimmer, you just see a small snapshot of the facts of the case within the first few weeks of the children's birth. And clearly that's not the time frame that the court was considering at the time of trial. So I understand what the case law says, and I see how her three witnesses could paint a very different picture of mother's life during those first 2 weeks. And the agency did not contest that she had a bond with the children initially and she properly cared for them in the hospital. Nobody contested that she very much showed love for her children initially. But that's not even close to what was happening at the time of trial. So two very different time periods, and practically I'm not sure how you could segregate them.
Am I correct in understanding your brief? I think in your written argument, you've essentially asked us, your first argument is that we simply ignore the issue of whether or not the presumption was rebutted and just affirm the district court's independent finding that she is palpably unfit. Am I correctly understanding your position on that?
Correct, Your Honor. I think I'm making two separate arguments in that regard, but I think in this case, the evidence rose to the level of clear and convincing supporting just a straight palpable unfitness finding. I'm sorry, Your Honor, you're on mute.
I apologize. It appears there are no further questions for you, so thank you for your argument. Ms. Wimmer, you have an opportunity for a rebuttal argument.
Thank you. I just have a few things I'd like to respond to with respect to Ms. French's argument. She started her argument argument by talking about how the agency started learning about facts regarding my client from the prior involuntary termination when they started getting information from Colorado. And I believe Ms. French's argument is that that's when the agency started to realize that this case before you was very similar to the case in Colorado. And I would argue that that is not the case. And the record before the court, it would be the addendum page 3, which is the court's June 17th, 2022 order, outlines what the court found with respect to what was going on in Colorado. I believe they took the language right from that Colorado order. And, you know, in at that time in Colorado, my client was not complying with treatment plans, was not receiving treatment for mental health and chemical dependency. That wasn't the case in this case. She got into the International Falls community and sought out those resources and was doing that. The Colorado, during that time period, there wasn't evidence of continued sobriety. That wasn't the case here. She had to be sober in order to have visits with her children, in order to stay under that boarding agreement at the Bemidji Hospital. She had to prove that. The Colorado case, there was no in-person visitation with the children, and there was inconsistent communication. That wasn't the case here. There was visits with the children, and the Colorado case, there was no stable employment. There was testimony provided that my client was employed. So I do think they are two very different cases. The other thing I wanted to clarify, Ms. French talked about visitations and when those ceased. And I believe she referenced that the district court ordered that. And I would just point the court's attention also in the addendum, page 14. And it's also an order of Judge Shermone's, and it's a memorandum at the end of his order. And in that memorandum, Judge Shermone explains that with respect to visitation and parenting time, the court was going to give deference to the agency and the guardian ad litem. So the court didn't, I know they had ordered no reasonable efforts were required, but visits could have continued if the agency and the guardian ad litem would have allowed that, and they didn't. And that's also part of the record, the trial record. And then finally, Your Honor, the court had asked Ms. French questions about my client's burden of production, the burden to rebut the presumption of palpable unfitness. And I would just like to add that in addition to the witnesses that were called, the parties did stipulate to two exhibits that were introduced by my client. And they were, the exhibits were documentation with respect to the visits at Friends Against Abuse in the period of time after my client was discharged from the hospital and her children were discharged from the hospital. It also included documentation from an entity in the International Falls area called Northern Options for Women, which demonstrated some parenting classes that my client had taken as well. So that was also additional evidence that was before the court. And I have nothing additional.
Thank you, Ms. Wimmer, for your rebuttal argument. Thank you to both attorneys for your excellent arguments. The case is submitted and the court will issue its opinion in writing within 45 days in a case of this type. So the case is submitted. And that is our final oral argument for the day. And so the panel is now adjourned.
Thank you, Your Honor.